Resilient Cyber Podcast brings you conversations from diverse cybersecurity professionals, ranging from executives, subject matter experts, and aspiring entrants. Today's diverse threat landscape requires systems that can withstand a variety of cyber incidents, remaining trustworthy and secure.
Hi, my name is Chris Hughes. This is the Resilient Cyber Show, and today I'm joined by Dr. Christina Liagotti. Christina, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Chris. It's a real pleasure.
Yeah, I'm excited to chat with you. I've been following some of your content around AI and AI governance and security, which are incredibly hot topics. But for folks who haven't seen some of your content, you know, or come across your profile and so on yet, can you tell us a bit about your background and the role you're in now?
Yeah, awesome. Well, I work for MITRE, which is a not-for-profit that kind of gets to play at that intersection of government and industry and academia. We get to collaborate with a lot of different folks. It's actually a fairly like decent-sized organization, too. We're over 10,000, so we get to work across a lot of different technical sectors as well. But in MITRE, I run our Trustworthy and Secure AI department, which is a group of about 55 folks focused on this whole new and evolving landscape around AI assurance and trust and responsibility, right? And within that, I also lead MITRE Atlas, which is our big community collaboration around AI security and really has been one of the most really fun projects that I've ever gotten to work on in my 8 years at MITRE, because over the last 5 years, we've been able to build out this big community collaborative around Atlas to help the community at large, right, both government and industry, make progress on these AI security challenges by kind of taking the threat landscape and breaking it down into more generalizable bite-sized pieces that folks can then, you know, start to understand in a more consistently generalizable way and then actually start to solve some of the challenges that they're faced with those new threats.
Yeah. So for folks that, you know, haven't read or looked at the Atlas project quite yet, you know, how exactly did it come about? And, you know, how did you get the opportunity to be a part of it? Like, I've dug in recently and it's a great resource. You know, I published an article about it recently. I'll share with folks, but it reminded me of other efforts like OWASP LLM Top 10 or OWASP AI Exchange. There's other frameworks out there from, you know, NIST and folks like that. You know, how'd this one come about and you know, how's it going so far?
Yeah, definitely. Atlas was very much originally inspired by the traditional MITRE attack matrix, which has been a tool that much of the cyber community has used to get a handle on traditional cyber threats over the last 10 plus years. So when we first started having some conversations with different folks in industry and a particular government sponsor about 5 years ago, one of the ideas that we came up with in that conversation was to create the Atlas matrix to better characterize these new AI security threats that were starting to continually rise and evolve about 5 years ago. So we started with that. And that original conversation led to a very raw version of what is now the Atlas matrix. It was just a very basic spreadsheet on GitHub. And we collaborated with a bigger group of industry partners, about a dozen different companies, and then some government sponsors to create that original version. And it's evolved ever since then to deliberately kind of stay up to date with these new threats that are facing the AI landscape and break those down into these kind of smaller tactics and techniques that then an adversary would ultimately chain together into a sequence of events to attack our AI-enabled systems. As you would imagine, that actually still incorporates some of the original tactics and techniques from the attack matrix, because AI-enabled systems are, you know, never existing in a vacuum. They're always part of a larger system of systems complex. So the attack chains that we see in the wild are kind of a fairly unique set of combinations of these new AI security type tactics and techniques that are kind of focused on taking advantage of the AI-enabled components in the system or how they're being integrated, or even the kind of AI unique infrastructure that's around some of these kind of models and tools that are being used in the wild, and then kind of chaining that together with some of the more traditional attack techniques from the cyber world. And that is the kind of like core purpose of the Atlas matrix itself and the public-facing website. And then over the last 5 years, we've built out a bunch of different lines of effort underneath that to make the matrix more actionable. So there have been a lot of different things that we've put out, including the mitigations page on the Atlas website, and AI Security 101 for folks that are just starting to come up to speed on all of this. And then a bunch of additional resources like our threat emulation tools and then incident and vulnerability sharing elements that I can dig into a little bit more later on.
Yeah. First off, you know, the additional resources are amazing. I'm going to share those in the show notes in the post so people can check them out. The one-on-one security piece, the mitigation piece. So it's not just, hey, here's this threat, here's this risk. It's like, here's what you can actually do about it. Here's some recommendations, right? How to go about mitigating it. And, you know, I also love that as I went through it, like, you know, for someone who's been in cyber for a while, I was like, oh, this is familiar, right? I've seen this before. But there are some nuances to AI's Pete, you know, some of the particular tactics and techniques. I'm like, oh, this is new. This is, you know, obviously novel and kind of specific to the AI realm. And so I love that it's kind of a mix of things that we've heard and seen before, as well as some new things to consider when it comes to AI. So it's a really amazing resource. And as you said, it kind of walks through that attack chain of reconnaissance, you know, information gathering, exploitation, et cetera. So I wanted to ask, you know, as we look at this landscape, you know, organizations are increasingly adopting AI, LM, you know, and Gen AI, et cetera. And, you know, we're trying to keep up right on the security side. And we're still flushing out some of the fundamental things, that the fundamental risks and threats and vulnerabilities. You know, why is it so important to have like a standardized way to characterize all this?
Yeah, I mean, the same way that attack has been useful to the cyber community for the last 10 plus years, being able to break down a security problem into some kind of repeatably understood and then kind of paired with mitigations type chunks, right? Like you can break it up into pieces. It makes the problem a lot easier to deal with, especially in a repeated fashion over time. So that's the same thing that we've seen with the AI security community that's been rapidly coming up to speed, and especially with the threat landscape evolving as quickly as it has, it's been a lot easier for folks to kind of understand that information, right? Like at this mid layer of detail, you brought up like the OWASP top 10 earlier, right? Like there are different resources across the community, including that like AI Security 101 page, right? That are more like introductory, like higher level, like here's what you need to start looking at as you start to worry about AI security concerns, or maybe this is why you need to worry about AI security concerns. Atlas is more that mid layer down of starting to break it into pieces that folks can then start to be a little bit more actionable with. But even more than that, one of the major lines of efforts that we've been building out over the last several years has been to take it down to the next layer down from there with a lot more of this kind of data-driven information at scale. Because it's definitely something that we need to be able to continue to arm the community with the information they need to actionably start to deal with these threats in a repeatable, well-understood way.
Yeah, as you said this, I started laughing a little bit because you talked about the data-driven approach. And as people dig into Atlas, one thing they'll notice is there's a robust set of use or case studies showing like real world scenarios, research driven scenarios, for example, where things can be done or have been done, or there's been a real world impact on an organization. Because when we look at the AI landscape, I'm sure you know this, there's a lot of, you know, kind of hype and buzz and dare I say FUD, right? Of fear, uncertainty and doubt. So why do you think this data driven approach is so key too, to kind of ground it in a real world, you know, kind of use case, for example?
Yeah. You just said it, right? Like it's just cutting through the hype, being able to give somebody something that they can immediately bite into and say, okay, now I know what I need to prioritize on. Because if you're looking at all the headlines, right? Like hearing all of this hype cycle around what you can do, what you can't do, what you need to worry about with AI, right? Like even just knowing where to start is really challenging for a lot of organizations right now. So giving them something to where they can quickly look at the threat landscape and understand what's been proven, right? What real world attacks have actually been executed in the wild in those kind of bite-sized chunks, right? And then them being able to compare that to the types of AI-enabled systems or use cases that they have inside their environment gives them a little bit more of an opportunity to say, okay, I need to be worried about these types of tactics and techniques. Let's go over to the mitigations page and start to think about the mitigations I need to employ inside of my environment to start to prevent some of these attacks. And that's the other part of this that is honestly kind of still pretty scary inside of the AI security environment right now. We don't even have mechanisms as a community to mitigate, much less like detect, right, some of these types of attack vectors right now. So as much as anything, this is about informing organizations of the types of risks that they're taking and putting systems out or using them in certain ways, just so they're including that in their data-driven risk analysis, right? Because some of these things are not going to be immediately mitigatable, but they're things that it's really critical that, especially if you're using an AI-enabled system in a high consequence way, you're considering in your like risk calculus, right? So that's very much why we take this kind of data-driven approach, why we deliberately try to help folks cut through that hype cycle, right, to be able to start to actionably focus on the things that they need to focus on in order to be able to deal with these challenges over time.
Yeah. Speaking of, you know, kind of taking action and being prepared, I noticed, if I'm not mistaken, that you participated in an event, you know, tabletop AI, a security incident tabletop exercise with CISA and other folks, you know, on the federal and industry side of things. You know, can you talk about that experience and why, you know, as we see this AI adoption start to grow, why is it important for folks to kind of do these exercises using resources like Atlas and others to kind of be prepared for not, you know, not when, or not if I should say, but when something happens right. When it comes to AI?
Yeah, we've been very fortunate to get to support a really forward-leaning sponsor in the CISA JCDC.AI team to be able to bring together a large group of companies that are kind of on the front lines of dealing with these challenges on a day-to-day basis and help them and work with them, right, to help us start to create a little bit more of a playbook for how to share information around when these systems are attacked or when they fail, right, like in these kind of especially security environments. So it is very much one of those really unique sets of opportunities for us to continue to serve, right, like MITRE is that, you know, not-for-profit safe space in the middle, right, be able to continue to partner with both government and industry to make a deliberate set of progress towards one of the larger things across the landscape that we need to be working on. And in that element here for the TTXs, these have been very focused on information sharing and developing a playbook to deliberately help folks understand what they need to be doing, right, what they need to be watching for, help us as a community standardize both how we're capturing the information and how we're sharing it.
Yeah, I think it's really important because on one hand, like I said, on the, you know, there are some things like, oh, we know this, we've seen this, this is kind of common practice, but there's some nuances to the AI aspect where right. There's new considerations, new things to keep in mind, new methodologies we might want to use and so on. So I was excited to see that and read some of the news coming out of that event. I think more and more organizations are probably going to, if I had to guess, do similar situations in tabletops. At least I would hope so, to be prepared, you know, for AI incidents. I want to ask you too, as someone that's real close to the AI security space, the AI domain more deeply, you know, there's kind of two kind of conversations in the industry going on right now. One is, you know, AI for security, using AI mm-hmm. to bolster how we do security, be more effective, address the ever kind of present workforce challenges we have, things like that. And then there's another side of that, which is, you know, securing the use of AI itself, right? And, you know, securing AI. As someone close to that, what are some aspects of each of those that, you know, you're really interested in, think I have a lot of promise, you know, that catch your attention on both sides of the coin there?
Yeah, we've been really thrilled to see the amount of progress that the community has made already, right? Like in our direct collaborations with, I mean, we work with over 100 or 150 organizations now across the community, and just the number of companies that have deliberately shifted and government organizations that have shifted to focus and prioritize this have been a massive, like, right, exponential growth over the last several years, especially since LLM started to kind of capture the minds and imagination of the community. So the amount of progress that we've seen has been really encouraging. And I'd say some of the biggest areas where we've seen progress has actually been in a lot of the shift from, you know, moving away from some of the more traditional cyber mindset of saying like, okay, we're going to do a review of this tool, you know, checkbox, right? Like it's clean to use, you're good to go, right? That does not work in the vast majority of these scenarios where you're using an AI-enabled system. So seeing organizations start to adapt their process, understand a little bit more that this has to be a continual life cycle understanding, constant measurement of risk, constant reevaluation of new ways that you might use the same AI-enabled system, right? Because the risk is unique to not just the AI-enabled system, but the use case for that system. So you have to be kind of comfortable with doing that risk analysis around each and every types of like scenario for that AI-enabled system to be used in. And seeing that progression, seeing some of these types of mitigations that we have up on the public-facing website used to start to kind of measure and understand the risk around this and then start to repeatedly deal with it over time or at minimum be aware of it has really encouraged us that folks are making progress here. And I mean, to be fair, on the AI security side, we're still seeing fairly low-level sophistication attacks work pretty well in this environment. So the adversaries really haven't had to get super sophisticated. I mean, like we've had incredible researchers in this environment proving out different like patch attacks, right? Or really sophisticated things that are proven to be very effective. But honestly, they're a pretty big lift to build out some of those attacks. And in a lot of ways, adversaries aren't having to get that sophisticated because the very low-hanging fruit type attacks are still working so well in this environment. And that's where I think the community is getting a little bit better at some of their basic cyber hygiene practices that are now starting to adapt and deal with a little bit more of the at least thought process behind understanding this AI security risk. On the AI for cyber side, I'd say that conversation has really taken off, especially over the last year. As the LLM side of things, right, like starting to think about agentic architecture and what that can do for the traditional cyber world has a lot of people excited. There's definitely some limitations. I really don't think the cyber community needs to be too worried about, you know, losing all of their jobs anytime soon, because there's some obvious limitations to what these systems can do inside of these environments. You're not going to just suddenly have an entirely AI-enabled adversary that can, you know, execute massive numbers of like really sophisticated attack patterns. But they can be useful in and have been proven already to be very useful for more simple things like drafting a phishing email or something, right? Things that we used to be a little bit more relaxed about being able to detect by, you know, looking for spelling errors or formatting or grammar issues or those kinds of things. And LLMs are fantastic at working through those problems for us. So I've heard numbers of like upwards of 80 times the previous numbers of like sophisticated phishing emails entering different companies' environments over the last 6 to 9 months since adversaries started incorporating AI-enabled systems into their, you know, attack chain. So it's definitely going to continue to become more of a thing. But I also don't think that it's something that, you know, is going to immediately change the landscape within the next, you know, couple of months, right? Like we have a little bit of time. There's a proactive window on both sides of this problem. And if we as a community continue to make progress on, I'd say, like the most cutting edge, like, well, maybe like front of the tip of the sword kind of things, right? Like that we need to be focusing on to deliberately try to prevent some of these vulnerabilities on both sides of that coin. I think that's where we're going to be most effective. But kind of figuring out what the tip of the sword actually is here is really why we continue to try to take a data-driven approach on both sides of that problem.
Yeah, so many great points there. The data-driven approach in terms of how we prioritize and focus our attention in the areas where we think we'll have the most, you know, impact and return on value and return on investment. And then the aspect you brought up about you know, as cool as it is to think about the novel, you know, nuanced, really highly sophisticated attacks and techniques, we know that the age-old, you know, kind of hackers don't hack in. They log in, like credential compromise, you know, asset inventory, things like this are still fundamental pervasive problems that we need to address, right? Including when it comes to AI and AI security. So I'm glad you brought that up, because it can be easy to focus on the next shiny thing, right, and forget about the fundamentals for sure. I also wanted to ask you, you've kind of advocated and emphasized, you know, the role of the community in this. And like Meyer has taken a very collaborative approach of how they've done, you know, my Atlas, as well as many other initiatives like Attack and so on. You know, when you look at this space, you know, what are some of the key opportunities and open questions right now that you think the community can kind of get involved in and get engaged in, provide feedback on as we look at AI security?
Yeah, absolutely. Atlas would not exist without the community. And I mean, the whole purpose of it is to serve the community, right? So it is very much a community-driven approach. And one of the major things that we've even like taken inspiration from has not just been like the more traditional attack world, but also things like CVE and CWE that MITRE also operates for a lot of the community, or even things like the Assayas database, which is another kind of incident-focused database that we, again, kind of serving in that safe space in the middle kind of role, operate for the FAA and like the aviation community, right? So we're deliberately kind of building off of things that have worked well in the past, like those kinds of models that MITRE still operates, but also deliberately trying to kind of engage the community on what they need the most in order to deal with some of these challenges, right? So that's why so many of these like different Atlas lines of effort are very much based on the questions and the needs that we're seeing and hearing from across the community members that are very involved or like deliberately focusing on AI security to a certain extent. So I definitely see this like large landscape of problems on the AI security front as something that we continually need more and more people involved in. And that's also why like I'm continually thrilled when I see more organizations you know, standing up to focus on this, even like, you know, partnering with other collaborative groups like OWASP, like ML Commons, right? Like even like the new COSI collaborative that was just launched, like there are more than enough problems on the table that I think if we start to just break them up into different components and everybody's working on different pieces of that problem, that means that we're all continually kind of rising together. So this is very much a community-driven aspect. And why I still feel confident that we've got a really good shot, right, at mitigating these kinds of risks that are facing the entire community as a whole. And that's exactly why we're focused on this incident sharing effort right now, which is continually designed to, you know, give folks an environment where they can share their sensitive organizational data with MITRE as that safe space third party in the middle, right? Like under a very lightweight information sharing agreement. We anonymize that with them and then share it with a larger trusted community, but not like fully public either, right? Because it's deliberately designed in several different layers here to allow folks to see a little bit more of what's going on, right? Like that whole data-driven approach. You need to be able to look outside of even your own organizational silo to see a little bit more of the attack patterns that are consistently showing up. And even more than the attack patterns, the like effective red team exercises, right? Like that's actually why we incorporate more of these like real world proven red team exercises in the Atlas matrix, because in a lot of ways you can't even detect that like data poisoning has happened on a model before you go and grab it from a public repository. We need some of those like proven real world research examples. Like for example, there's a poison GPT case study on the Atlas website that shows that you can do something like download a model from Hugging Face, change a few of the weights to deliberately create, you know, poisoned outputs. And then, you know, in this particular case, the researchers re-uploaded it to Hugging Face and could have kind of exposed it to the world in such a way that they would have then be distributing like malicious information, and no one else could have been able to measure or detect that had been done. And it's those kinds of challenges that are like proven to be effective in a real world environment that we deliberately try to capture as red teaming case studies inside like exercises, right? Like in the Atlas matrix as well, to continue to try to help folks see both sides of that, see the both the hypothesized and the demonstrated kind of attacks that are potentially affecting their systems in the wild, have that data-driven approach so they can really see that data at large and then be part of the larger collaborative community to start to deliberately inform where we're going to start to fill in some of these gaps next in the larger set of efforts that we have going on around Atlas.
Yeah, I love the intentionality of that, of, you know, breaking the theory, right, of this could happen, this is a potential, you know, risk or threat or vulnerability, et cetera, to like, here is what has happened, has been demonstrated as possible, and maybe, as you point out, has actually impacted other organizations, whether it's within your industry or another industry, you know, unrelated to you, people being in a position to kind of share that information in a safe space, as you said, so you can kind of draw insights to TTPs and mitigations and things like that, so you can bolster your own organization's security posture when it comes to similar types of attacks, is really key there. And something else that you said that made me think of something is, it's funny how there's so many parallels to, you know, in some ways, and you talk about this within Atlas, is the software supply chain attack space, yeah, where I've spent a lot of time the last several years, to the AI space, especially with open source models and mm-hmm. things like that. There's a lot of parallels of open source software threats and risks and then open source AI models and things like that. So I found that very, very interesting as well when I dug into the Atlas project. So I want to ask, you know, we're coming up to the end here. For folks that want to learn more about Atlas and, you know, some of the work MITRE is doing around AI and AI security more broadly, where should they go? Where can they get started? You know, you've dropped some of the resources here, but if you could provide those again for folks.
Yeah, absolutely. So the atlas.mitre.org website is where you can go to get started. That has the AI Security 101 page. There's a resources tab with links to the GitHub page where all of our tools are open sourced and all of the different resources are there for you to start to take advantage of. Beyond that, we also have a Slack space for you to get engaged in the conversations around where we're headed, what you're seeing, what you're concerned about, what you can get started with, right? Or even just engaging with your peers and other organizations. That Slack space is where you can have some of those informal conversations. So get involved in that. There's a link again on the Atlas website where you can start to join in there. And then if you want to be involved in like deliberately helping us build out some of these lines of effort, one of the other things that we're deliberately focusing on that you actually just brought up, Chris, about the kind of supply chain side of this is where we're also working on launching a rebranded version of the AI risk database, because we just took that over just a few months back and are kind of relaunching that. And its original inspiration is kind of based off of VirusTotal to help folks capture the vulnerability side of this, right? Because we've been working pretty closely with the CVE and CWE boards and communities to deliberately try to kind of help folks see what falls inside of the scope of those existing collaboratives and what falls outside of it. Because there's still actually a significant number of vulnerabilities and weaknesses that fall outside of the scope of some of the tools that we're already using as a community. So we're launching the AI risk database as another tool for folks to continue to get involved in to help capture the vulnerabilities. In addition to the incident sharing effort that I mentioned earlier, mitigations, our threat emulation tools are on the GitHub page as well. So a lot of resources out there. Start looking through them. Reach out to us. There's a contact email on the webpage there. It's atlas@mitre.org that comes directly into me and my team. We would love to have you all involved.
Thank you so much. So as you said, atlas.mitre.org, folks, dig into the tools, the resources, the community. As you heard, so many different things you can get involved in or lean on and start to use within your own organization. And Dr. Leah Gotti, thank you so much for coming to chat with us today.
Thank you, Chris. I really enjoyed it.
Take care.